With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Man, I got the collection plate ready today. Wow. All right, welcome to Speaking for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. That dude, coming up, we'll tell you if Mark Cuban deserved a harsher punishment.
And if LeBron has actually made the Lakers less appealing. But we start every day with our Whitlocks. What you got, big dog?
Oh, I'm going to take you to church this afternoon.
Testify, brother.
I'm going to take you to church.
Let's do it.
Proverbs 16 and 18, mm-hmm. Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before the fall.
Okay.
It's a scripture that applies to New England Patriots head coach Bill Belichick. His spirit is very haughty. His pride has run amok. I started preaching this in the immediate aftermath of Super Bowl 52. He has always stood on the decisions I make are about winning. Now when he stands on that, the 53 guys in that locker room go, no, you don't, not all the time. And it's going to ring hollow. And that's going to be a problem for Bill Belichick moving forward. Honestly, the Malcolm Butler decision is one of the dumbest decisions a smart person has made in the history of the planet. The only thing I can think of on the same level is when Prop Joe introduced Marlo to the Greek in The Wire. Joe crawled into his own grave with that one.
It was over.
And Belichick buried he and Brady's sixth Super Bowl title with the mysterious and still unexplained Butler decision. Pride goeth before destruction. Now this week, thanks to Ian O'Connor's amazing book, Belichick, we learned that Belichick and some of his assistants believe Tom Brady isn't essential to the Patriots' success or even all that special as a quarterback. The good book says, O'Connor's good book, not King James's, quote, I don't think the coaches view Tom as special as everyone else does in football. Mr. Kraft thinks Tom is the greatest gift ever, but the coaches don't. The book further says Belichick and his minions believe they would have had just as much success with 10 to 15 other NFL quarterbacks. Pride goeth before destruction.
Preach, brother.
We're in that season, Marcellus, the season of destruction for Bill Belichick. His ego has gone too far. His spirit has grown too haughty. He believes in the system more than the men he created. Y'all ain't hearing me. Belichick thought he didn't need Malcolm Butler to beat the Philadelphia Eagles. He thought his system would stop those high-flying birds. Nick Foles and the Eagles scored 41 points, and Malcolm Butler never touched the field. The game of football is a life lesson, and Belichick's ego is now obscuring the game's number one teaching. Football teaches us how much we need each other, how much man needs man to survive and thrive. Oh, we need a game plan, we need structure and discipline and all the right nutrients, but we need each other more. Belichick is full of himself. He doesn't believe he needs Butler or Brady or anybody. If everyone would just do their jobs, adhere to the Belichick system, the Patriots would never lose and things would be fine. Life is more complicated and spiritual than that. Brady's wife, Giselle, trainer Alex Guerrero, owner Bob Kraft, and children have opened Brady's mind to a deeper human connection. Belichick's a short-circuiting robot from Westworld. His world is disintegrated into chaos. Men will be less likely to follow him moving forward, most especially Tom Brady. We are in the season of destruction for Bill Belichick. It is over, Marcellus. That is my take as a journalist.
Yes.
A wannabe preacher. What's your take as an athlete?
Wow. I agree with a lot of what you said right there. I mean, collection plate go around. Donations. Respect to what you said. There is something I take exception with, and that's the fact that you said that he's going to lose this locker room. And that's where I disagree, because the first thing you have to know about any locker room is the level of segregation within that same locker room. Tom Brady and his existence, because of his performance and his championships and his accolades, is different than even a Gronkowski's. And even if you want to make those two married in existence, high society in the locker room, there are 51 other players sitting there saying, my name is not Tom Brady. My game is not Gronkowski's. And I have to go out there in a non-guaranteed sport, a non-guaranteed culture, where I only eat what I kill and stay away from those political issues up top. So as you see Kraft beefing with Belichick, or Belichick beefing with Brady, Brady is now in alliance with Gronkowski. Y'all can have those conversations, and I see them from afar. But if I'm one of those 51 other guys in the locker room, I am about the meat and potatoes. I'm about whatever Belichick says to get me to that payday. So he has not lost the locker room, because those guys are properly motivated. This is where the NFL wins, in making sure you're always going to show up to go get that opportunity.
It's the intangibles, particularly recently, maybe even in the last decade, it's been the intangibles that have set the Patriots apart from everybody else.
Yes.
Even if you go
yes.
back to their very beginning, when they beat the Rams mm-hmm. the first time, and they came out as a team, and the Rams were this super team. They were defending Super Bowl champions, I believe. They were the super team, and the Patriots, Ty Law, and all, they all bought in to the system.
They did.
And to Belichick.
Yeah.
And so, to me, every great leader needs a disciple. And when you lose that top disciple, like he's lost Brady, I think the intangibles that have always given the Patriots an edge, they're going to get less of that. And so, yeah, you're right. Guys are going to still do their jobs.
Yes.
But there's just this little extra 1-2% that they're going to be missing because of the break between Brady and Belichick. And I think that intangible difference is really important to the Patriots, because they're never the most talented team.
Well, let me use your words against you. And you talk about these intangibles, but let's talk about something that's tangible and not put extra on the extra 2% you say that materializes every game in the Patriots' favor. Those tangibles are, this is a team that is 1-1. This is a team that last year was 1-1. And last year we heard it after the Kansas City game, especially 0-1. Oh, my God, the sky is falling. And then we went through a season, at least half the season. The defense, get out of here. Matt Patricia has to go. And then we went through the latter part of the season. Oh, my God, do you understand the implosion that is occurring on the Patriots roster? And we have, as a mass media, tried to predict and forecast the demise of this Patriots organization, not just as recent as last year, but forever time, it seems like, since they've been on this dynastic run. And you know what they end up doing every single time, whether they cut a Richard Seymour prematurely or they go out there and say Brady and Belichick don't have a great relationship. They keep on winning, man. Just win, baby. So I don't understand why now the sky is falling.
Because, and that's why I crafted this argument the way that I did.
Okay.
This isn't me talking. This isn't the sportscaster. This is a biblical lesson that every man must bow to, in my view, in terms of when your pride and ego get so far out there that everybody can see that you think you did it all. I created this system, and this system is more important than all these men who God and I help create and mold, and you lose a Tom Brady, and I think it's crystal clear, him and Tom Brady just aren't connected. We don't have to speculate that anymore. We've seen it in Time versus Tom. We see it now in the reporting of Ian O'Connor's book. It's out of the closet now that Bill Belichick's ego, the Malcolm Butler to me was the big smoking gun, that his ego is out of control. And so for me, the Bible has spoken on this. When your ego is this out of control, destruction is on its way. And I see a Patriots team and a Bill Belichick that, again, when you quit believing in men and start just believing in you and your system, it's undefeated.
Okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that record. Let's talk about, you're speaking in general terms, and I respect it. You're saying the machine, the system, men. let's get specific. Let's talk about one man. You said Malcolm Butler. Now, everyone at the time said, how in a two-week span between a Super Bowl and AFC Championship game did you finally figure out that Malcolm Butler doesn't deserve any playing time despite 97% playing time regular season, 100% in the playoffs? How did you figure out Malcolm Butler's not the guy for you? And even at halftime when you realize we need some help in the pass defense, why not Malcolm Butler? I hate to say it, Belichick looks prophetic. Belichick looks right. Have you looked at Malcolm Butler's numbers this year? Malcolm Butler has given up the most touchdowns as a cornerback when targeted and the most receiving yards. Now, you couple that with the reports, or at least the intel, that Malcolm Butler in that Super Bowl run had a little more fun than the Patriot way should allow for. Then you see this performance. Maybe Belichick, once again, is ahead of time.
He might be on Malcolm Butler.
Okay.
But in that game, when Nick Foles is lighting you up that way, you got to give the guy a snap or two.
I respect that.
The man won you a Super Bowl with an interception.
Yeah.
Played good, I think, in a second Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And so he was owed that opportunity. There's got to be some loyalty. And when you sit there in that Patriots locker room and you're Tom Brady, it's like, damn, man, who are you loyal to?
Yeah.
There is no human connection here at all. We've done all this. There has to be some sort of human connection, or humans will disconnect from your system.
Wrong in this case. Now, I'm not going against the Bible. Lord, don't set me down. But I am going against your use of the Bible in this scenario because Tom Brady is motivated as well. He's not just like those other 51 guys saying, I'm going to do my job. He's Tom Brady. He's at 5 rings. And Tom Brady knows this in his marketing world. TB12, Alex Guerrero, franchising out, writing a book, Facebook. All this is showing a different side of branding and marketing. What does 6 rings look like? Only Michael Jordan. When you say 5 rings, you say Kobe, Derek Jeter. That's great. But they wear Jordan's clothes. I want to be the man, the GOAT, and that's beyond doubt. And I think because he's motivated to get that 6th ring, he knows where he has to be, and he knows where he has to fall in line to get that 6th ring.
I think you make an excellent point. The only thing I think you're forgetting is Tom saying he wants to play till 45. And so trust me, he feels like he'll have another opportunity to get that 6th ring.
Elsewhere or with Belichick?
No, I think this is it for Belichick.
Stop that.
I think this is his last year.
What?
Why do you think Josh McDaniel stayed and didn't take that head coaching job?
Because they gave more money?
I think in Brady's mind, we're doing one more year with Belichick, and then we're moving on.
Wow.
This is it.
I've never seen a player ever get delusional to the place where they think they're going to outlast a coach, a successful coach, a championship
coach. Even Bob Kraft, man.
They are. You're right there. Like, it was 3-1. At one time, it was Jimmy G, Tom Brady, and Kraft using the same agent against Bill Belichick. Yeah, you're right there, but coaches outlast players all the time, and the league outlasts us all. So I don't see how it's going to work this time.
Ride going before destruction.
I hear you, brother.
All right, welcome back. I'm Jason Whitlock. He is that dude. Time for some big stories. Let's start in Pittsburgh, where Antonio Brown has had a roller coaster week from his tirade on the sideline Sunday to not showing up for work on Monday to Mike Tomlin disciplining him for going AWOL. Today, Brown spoke for the first time since Sunday's game and addressed everything that's happened.
Antonio, why were you not around on Monday?
Personal reasons. Obviously, the coach knew where I was at. We talked between me and him.
You apologize anyway?
Apologize for what? I got a personal issue. You guys have personal issues at home. Stuff happened.
Yeah.
You guys apologize for it or what? That's life. I got to apologize for the way I react. I got to apologize for everything. I'm a man. I don't make excuses. If I did something, I take solely responsibility for my actions. I'm accountable for my actions, and I take full responsibility.
Antonio, after the 4th touchdown, why were you so mad?
Are we losing the game? Are we getting beat by 40? We haven't won a game yet. For me, as a Steeler, that's unacceptable. You know, I'm not on the sideline begging for the ball or making statements like you guys make. I'm pissed off. We losing. We suck.
You had just tied the game. James Conner just tied the game.
Now, you guys make assumptions about my emotion. You guys don't know me at all. You guys just write what you think gonna get hits. Between me and you, everyone in the locker know what I stand for, know what I'm about. The culture should be winning. That's all that matters. That's how business is winning. If we're not winning, I'm pissed off. I'm passionate about winning.
Antonio Brown is the head case I think a lot of us, including me, thought OBJ was. Antonio's is a bit of a circus, and he's part of the circus in Pittsburgh. I don't think this is what his response here is a good look for him. I don't think it's a good look for Mike Tomlin. I don't think it's a good look for the Steelers. I think he hurt his image today and over the weekend.
I don't think he hurt his image by that sound. I don't think anyone who hears that is surprised that that's coming from Antonio Brown, because if you read his resume in terms of what he's dealt with on and off the field, this is just another line item that you say check to what Antonio Brown has given us before. Think about it. This is the same dude who said, I'm gonna punch a reporter for saying something about me, right? So I'm not gonna be shocked now when I hear him check another reporter in his face in the moment about, you don't know what's going on. This to me highlights something greater about Pittsburgh that we're not giving them proper credit for. And every team in the NFL deals with disruptions, deals with distractions, issues. Every team, New England on down, right?
Yep.
So it's not so important if you fall down, but how do you get up from adversity? So the old saying by Muhammad Ali is, the difference between a champion and a contender is the champion got up one more time. Wileyism. So here's the point. Now, if you look at this situation, Pittsburgh has the best fire extinguisher in the NFL, putting out fires. Think about it.
Le'Veon Bell, who?
Wait a minute.
He ain't there.
Well, that fire is not even in the building. So, you know what? You put that one out. Roethlisberger, hey, reporter after reporter, you're not doing that well. You're not that good. You're struggling. You know what? Yeah, I suck. Now, reporter's sitting there like, oh, I didn't say that. And now you're stuck, reporter. Where's the Twitter off when I need it? Now, you get to Mike Tomlin. Hey, Mike Tomlin, your team seems distracted. They don't seem like they're focused, lacking leadership. Social media issues. Let's be adults in this room, please. Can we talk about only the serious topics of football? All right, reporter sitting there like, where do I go now? AB just did the same thing. Reporter saying, hey, man, you looked upset on the sidelines. Hey, I'm a competitor. Hey, man, you looked upset at your teammates. No, I just want to win. Hey, man, you know what? You missed a day of school, or just day at work. Do you know what happened? Nothing else to say. They're the best at putting out these fires.
I can't wait until Sunday.
Okay.
I really can't. No, Monday. I'm sorry.
Monday night. Tampa Bay.
Monday on this show, we'll set up the game.
Okay.
And then Tuesday, we'll come and talk about it, because the thing I think you may miss, and you may have been the captain of the Titanic, because they keep running into icebergs, and you get, ain't no problem. Just an iceberg.
Just a wave.
Just a wave. We're going to be all right. Full steam ahead.
Right.
And I think Monday night when Tampa Bay shows up, and if somehow Pittsburgh gets to 0-2-1, you're going to have to admit there's a problem in the ship.
Problem or frustration?
There's a 0-2-1, there's a problem in the ship.
Look, you're talking to a guy who was 0-3 and won 10 games, made the playoffs. So I'm not going to sit there and say, bail. I'm going to sit there and say, okay, oh, hell, this is tough, but we can still survive this. They're frustrated. Antonio Brown, let me keep it 100 now.
Yep.
Let me not defend everything Antonio Brown did. He's frustrated because he's looking at Ben Roethlisberger, 36-year-old quarterback, my quarterback, still throwing me the most targets in NFL. I love you, Ben, but you wanted to quit on us at one time, and I'm watching you get outperformed by a second-year player who was throwing dart after dart, and Antonio Brown was open on a few of those plays, especially in the end zone, and he wasn't getting the target or the perfect pass he's used to. I think a little bit of his frustration was the contrast of what I'm dealing with and what I'm seeing on the other side of this field. Little of that.
All right, to another big story, this time in the NBA, where Mark Cuban agreed to donate $10 million to women's groups after the league found the Mavs had committed serious workplace misconduct for failing to address sexual harassment by their former CEO. But the Dallas Morning News' Tim Kalishaw says the NBA botched the punishment, arguing that Cuban deserved to be suspended. On ESPN yesterday, Cuban admitted that even more severe and an even more severe form of punishment was never even considered.
Was there any point through all this where Adam Silver discussed selling the team with you?
No.
Was there ever a point you considered it yourself?
No. I don't run away from my mistakes.
Look, I want to tell everybody, go hunt down that interview. Rachel Nichols did a great job of exposing Mark Cuban. And this is what bothers me. If this were the NFL, there would be major calls for Mark Cuban's job. Mm. He wouldn't be allowed just to cut a check and move on from this. He's out in L.A. getting ready to tape Shark Tank. They're in Dallas holding a press conference addressing all these issues, and we're supposed to be pretending like he's taking this seriously. And he sat on TV, and Rachel did a great job exposing him. He knew nothing. He's Colonel Klink or whatever. I know nothing. Nothing. I wasn't. Dude, I can't even explain. I don't even know if I'm comfortable explaining some of the things that happened in their workplace environment from an employee that had already gotten in trouble. Mm. He drops a condom on the floor.
Yeah.
A used one. Right. And they're still trying to keep his job and like nothing's happened here. This is all. And Mark Cuban, I know nothing. I was blind to everything. If this was Urban Meyer, there would be protest and picketing going on in Dallas.
Because you forgot who he is, and you forgot who Mark Cuban is as an owner. So what you're trying to say about Mark Cuban falls short in two respects. First of all, who is Mark Cuban the owner? Oh, the guy who's wearing a T-shirt yelling at referees behind the basket for years, a celebrity owner who owns 200-plus businesses, who's on Shark Tank, and is a guy who is not expected to be omnipresent and to be all-knowing about all issues. That's one level. But here's where you really fall short, Jason, is the fact that he owns the organization. And in delegation of that power, he has lieutenants in charge who in this same report, and let's remind people, this report was conducted with 215 interviews, 1.5 million pieces of documentation, and everyone stopped short of saying culpability, and he was in the know. The only thing they could give him in terms of guilt was significant errors in judgment. But in terms of knowing, in terms of electronic transactions, text messages, hey, Mark Cuban knows this.
It's called
and that.
Plausible deniability.
I thought the same thing.
It's called plausible, and it's BS most of the time.
Well,
a lot of this stuff with these individuals was directly communicated. He was involved with. They got emailed notes of him advising things. And so you can't be. He said he never really even interviewed the CEO. He bought the team, inherited the CEO, and then said he never interviewed him. That's crazy. So either he's too incompetent to run the team, too busy to run the team, or he's just lying and shouldn't be running the team. But you just don't get to say when you're the owner and you've paraded yourself around for 15 years as the smartest person in sports. I'm the hands-on guy. I'm the boss. I can run for president. He was talking about running for president. Now we caught him with his dirty underwear, and they soiled and rotten like a 2-year-old child.
Hey, look at you. And you just said crazy and Mark Cuban in the same sentence and wanted shock value from that.
No.
He's an owner who does interviews on the Stairmaster, man. Mark Cuban beats to his own.
So he gets a pass?
No, he doesn't get a pass, but here's the thing. If Mark Cuban was proven to know and to actually have culpability, they would have certainly went after Mark Cuban. Here's the thing. He was all in on basketball operations. He was not all in, by the reports, on the business side where
they got emails of him talking about sales and marketing and all that. Look, man,
he knows what his business is about, but does he know day to day? Like, this is the NFL. They blame the culture on the owners all the time in the NFL as well. The owner once a week shows up. He gives us resources. He gives us opportunities.
Sets a tone, Marcellus.
Sets a tone.
Yes.
So how come then the culture can change with the same ownership? We've seen that happen time and time in real world businesses and in sports. Same ownership, different culture.
Well, when they get caught like this and they're forced to change, and he's basically handed his organization over to some female CEO.
Cynthia Marshall.
Yeah, and so he's handed the organization over. And, yeah, she's going to establish a different culture.
Right.
But, again, I'm just not ready, particularly when you've run around. You're the smartest guy on the planet. I'm running for president. I'm Mark Cuban. David Stern's an idiot, and he doesn't know how to run the NBA. And now when we find out your underwear are dirty, we just supposed to look the other way? No dice. And we know for a fact, Marcellus, I'm just going to stand on this. If it was football, we've seen Art Briles, we've seen Urban Meyer, we've seen everybody in football. We've seen Jerry Richardson sell his team, in my view, for less than the kind of stuff Mark Cuban was overlooking in his own organization. Football gets held to one standard. Basketball, let's cut a check. We'll do it. And Rachel, great interview. We'll do a tough interview, and then we'll move on. I ain't with it.
We're locked.
Yeah.
True power is in delegation.
And true power is in being a billionaire and cutting checks to cover up your mistakes.
Jason, do you have to be the smartest person in the world to be president?
No.
Well, there you go.
America 2018.
Well, there you go.
All right, welcome back. We're joined now by NBA champion Dante Jones. Let's move to the NBA, where Jimmy Butler demanded a trade out of Minnesota yesterday and appears to have his sights set on the law in Los Angeles, though not the team you might think. Butler actually listed the Clippers among his preferred destinations.
Yeah.
And according to a report from ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, that has since been deleted, LeBron's decision to join the Lakers made them a less appealing option for the T-Wolves star. It was reported in Adrian Wojnarowski's story originally that Jimmy wasn't that interested in being a sidekick for LeBron. They've since removed that from the story, but I buy it. Mm-hmm. I buy it that what LeBron has actually created is a bunch of wannabes. Everybody wants to be LeBron, and whether they can be LeBron or not. And so I do think there will be some reluctance from some superstars, maybe even Kawhi Leonard, certainly maybe Jimmy Butler here. I think there will be a reluctance from some superstar to come play Robin to LeBron's Batman, because they all want to be Batman like LeBron.
Yeah, I applaud Jimmy Butler first because he wants to go to the best franchise in the NBA, Los Angeles Clippers, Clip City, Chip City. Why not know that before you even get there? But also, what's wrong with knowing your value? What's wrong with knowing your worth and saying, huh?
Overestimating your value?
No, wait a minute. franchise player Jimmy Butler is, and he's saying, I am applying for the position of CEO. Now, which franchises need a CEO? Not senior VP. And when look, you play with LeBron, at best you're the senior VP. You're never going to be the CEO. So he wants to go somewhere and have that impact. So it's time for a Wileyism. And this is what Jimmy Butler is thinking. Look, do you want to go somewhere and carry the torch, or do you want to go somewhere to light the torch? Big difference. You go to the Lakers, guess who you are? Another torchbearer carrying it from 16 to 17 in the shadow of LeBron. You go to the Clippers, light that thing up, first in charge, legend of the franchise. Jimmy Butler, do you, dog, and do it right.
I respect him for having an opinion, for knowing where he wants to go, who he wants to play with. Everyone's not going to want to play with LeBron James. He's not an end-all, be-all. He's not for everyone. But Jimmy just decided where he wants to be. And we know, of course, as time has shown us, that wherever you say you want to go is not where you end up. And where you end up may be the best place for you, and you realize it when you get there, a la Paul George.
Yeah.
So Jimmy's like, and a la Kyrie Irving. Boston wasn't on his list. OKC wasn't on Paul George's list. But Paul George signed back because he found out that was what was best for him. That's where he enjoyed it the most. And we'll see how the chips fall in this Jimmy Butler situation. But it's not working out for him in Minnesota. He's found a sidekick who just got a max contract, who is not cut from the same cloth. He's not as tough as him. He's not a leader. He doesn't appeal to Jimmy and how Jimmy wants to play basketball. And he has an option. He did the responsible thing by telling Tom Thibodeau.
We'll get to the Andrew Wiggins part here in a minute. I just want to stay here for what do you think of my position that what LeBron has created is guys that want to mimic him more than perhaps learn from him?
You know, I disagree on that. You have guys who may want to, you have professionals that want to learn from him and get better. Like there's people who are striving to be the same person that they are and exist as that, or there's people who are trying to get better and grow. And everyone can grow. And I think Jimmy could learn something from LeBron. We all can learn. LeBron learns from either people who are under him. I don't think that's the culture in LA right now. That's what he has right now. That's the personality he has right now. Young kids who want to learn and grow with him.
You'll get
another star that will want to play next to him. And
this isn't a comment about whether LeBron has anything to teach him, because he certainly does. This is a comment about young people and just the delusion of youth, which sometimes leads you to greatness. Kyrie Irving, I want my own damn team. I want to be the man on my team. Whereas
and Kyrie was in the right for saying that and feeling that way.
But,
yeah.
And again, I know it was a different league and a different time and less mobility, but a Scottie Pippen was, I'm good being here with Jordan. I'm good.
I'm good winning.
Yeah, winning.
I'm good getting all the accolades that MJ, most of the accolades that MJ got.
Yeah.
I'm good going down in history and being in the Hall of Fame. I like all the things that come with carrying a team does not mean you'll end up in the Hall of Fame and be remembered for life. Scottie Pippen's going to be remembered for life. There's going to be some guys on first team All-NBA that people won't remember right now. But you'll always remember Scottie, who won consistently and who did it alongside of MJ.
But why the negative?
I respect Scottie for that.
Why the negative connotation when a James Worthy, who started this before Pippen, all those third?
Always remember him. For winning. Winning, you remember for winning.
But you're a third fiddle, and you could have went somewhere and been a star, but he stays still. Fine. Okay, respect. And then you see a Kyrie Irving who's like, no, I don't want to stay still. I'm already a champion. Let me go somewhere else and show that I can build this around me. Why the negative connotation for being a guy who wants to go somewhere and light the torch?
Because I think for Jimmy Butler, about to be 30, the opportunity to pair with LeBron, and maybe LeBron doesn't want him, who knows, but if the opportunity to pair with LeBron and do some real winning, with there's way too much upside in that for me to just sit around, no, I don't want to do that. I want to go somewhere to be the man. Seems a little crazy to me.
Not me, but.
All right.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Well, Butler's trade demand stirring up drama all over the NBA, with the brother of Butler's teammate, Andrew Wiggins, tweeting hallelujah after the news broke, which prompted a very strong response from our buddy, Steven Jackson.
This how the conversation should have went with Andrew Wiggins and his brother when Andrew found out his brother sent out that tweet about hallelujah and all that, right? I'm Andrew Wiggins. Say, big bro, I don't think you should have sent that tweet out. Why you say that? Because, you know, Jimmy Butler, man, he played with a lot of heart. He played hard. He played with a lot of heart. And I ain't got no heart. Now, you want to get on social media and talk about Jimmy? We lose him. My team ain't got no heart. Now, if you're gonna take me to the Wizard and help me find a yellow big road to give me a heart, then cool. You can talk about Jimmy all you want. Because you know I ain't got no heart. So, you going to take that back or tell me find a yellow big road and take me to the Wizard, man? Because I ain't got no heart at all. That's why Cleveland traded me. No bull.
Oh, my God.
Man.
Andrew Wiggins had a response of his own writing, quote, Steven Jackson / old dude stay hating like he was anything special, bum ass. I keep that same energy everywhere
what?
I go, Action Jackson.
Come on, man.
I'm going to try to take this to a serious place without denigrating Andrew Wiggins.
Mm.
When Andrew Wiggins was coming out of the draft and LeBron James and them wrote that letter and basically made it clear, no, we'd rather have Kevin Love or we don't want Andrew Wiggins. My understanding was that Cleveland and the thinking around the people who had power in Cleveland at that time was Andrew Wiggins and Canadian guys aren't American basketball players' cup of tea.
Mm.
And so Steven Jackson is reflecting a mentality of a lot of American-born basketball players about Canadian basketball players. They say it's a different basketball culture in Canada. And I remember I said this on Pardon the Interruption. People got all upset with me. And I go, hey, man, I'm just telling you what the people in power in Cleveland think about Canadian basketball players, and that's what they think.
Mm. Sounds synonymous to black quarterbacks. something sounds outdated. Look, I'm not going to dig that hole. I'm going to go here. LeBron, you're right. He didn't even mention Andrew Wiggins in that letter, which everyone knew. Uh-oh, Wiggins, be on the lookout. Next thing you know, Wiggins traded. LeBron James, oops. LeBron James, mistake, because LeBron James was constructing a team to beat the Spurs, and who came in and swooped up? All the championships, the Golden State Warriors. You think LeBron regrets not having an Andrew Wiggins and that versatility, that dynamic versus Kevin Love? I think he should. All right, let's move forward. Who's Andrew Wiggins? And I get tired of the impossible, immeasurable, no metric having conversation about heart. Every time I get around sports cats and when they lose all objectivity, they start talking about toughness and heart. He ain't got no heart. Can he ball? Yes, because the dude was ascending to the place of an all-star level, as you can see. Wiggins, 23.6 points a game. That's all-star level. Come on, y'all. And then Jimmy Butler comes in.
All points ain't created equal. Go ahead.
You're right. Empty calories sometimes.
Facts.
Empty calories,
facts.
But getting better every season in
Thank
all
you.
Metrics.
Thank you. You
and
said
then
that.
He gets with Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy Butler gets with his favorite coach.
Marcellus.
And then guess what happens?
Marcellus.
Y'all look at those numbers and tell me what happened. And please don't give me Hart.
He's a Clipper fan. Go ahead.
Hart and toughness are two of the biggest things in basketball that there is no metric for.
You're right.
And the dog in you is what separates some very talented players from some very good players. You could have Hart and marginal skill and still be better than a guy with more talent than you, because that sets in when adversity kicks in. That heart is what pushes you past in the tough times.
Agreed.
So where the Canadian aspect that you said, I understand what you mean, because Canadians are great people. They're great people to be around, great teammates. But the dog and the toughness part is what some people see in them as not having. You've had some amazingly talented Canadians like Steve Nash.
Yes.
Andrew Wiggins is talented.
Yes.
But then you have that dog, Tristan Thompson, who's Canadian as well, but he's the minority when it comes to Canadian basketball players. Not that they don't have talent, not that they're not good basketball players, but that toughness part. And when you're looking for a sidekick, you want somebody that's tough, that you can rely on and look in the foxhole and look next to him and say, you got my back. And if you can't look Andrew Wiggins in the eyes and say he doesn't think he has my back, then that's the problem. That's where Jimmy is looking. You pay all this money to this guy coming up. Mm. He's young, and I know him, and I've been in a foxhole with him, and I don't think I can trust him. And I think that's what they're looking at.
Marcellus, yeah. That's across the board in the NBA. There's a reason why Steven Jackson said what he said. There's a reason why.
With his cape out, though. He had his do-rag cape out.
Oh, yeah.
We can show you video of Jimmy Butler putting his hands on his throat, trying to see if Andrew Wiggins has a pulse or whatever. That's a pervasive thought about him across the league.
Oh, I agree with
whether
that.
Whether fair or unfair.
In the draft, that's why people were debating on taking him at number one, because of just his toughness, his mental toughness, and the dog that has in it. It was never his talent.
I've seen too many times that's been mishandled. I go back to my position in NFL and the Julius Peppers. You know what they said about Julius Peppers when he came out? Not a great work ethic. Looks like he's going half speed through everything. You know what it really was? He was so talented coming from basketball to football, and things were looking so simple to him. The guy is still going out there getting double-digit sacks in his 16th season. Sometimes you can mischaracterize a guy based on what your lens is seeing him as. So if you see a Canadian coming as soft, you say he's not tough.
But here's the issue.
Was an American
soft? Here's the issue, and we got to go on this. Here's the issue. What the players are saying now is, we're not speculating. We've seen his body of work for 2 or 3 years, and this is the book of
this. Only one bad.
And I think that's the
year.
It's the not the numbers ain't created equal.
Between basketball, football, and the heart thing, I think there's a separation in heart. And
yeah,
basketball.
We got more heart.
All right, welcome back. Marcellus and I are joined now by the NFL Network's Bucky Brooks. As you all know, I am a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer Marcellus here. So we're going to put on our thinking caps and take a deeper look at some big issues in sports. We've got a special cap for our Columbia Ivy League grad, Darnell. Bring it on out for Marcellus.
Oh, huh?
Bucky, I have to put up with this ego every day.
Thank you very much.
You know, he thinks he's smarter than everyone else here.
You're confined to the Waldorf Astoria.
You ready yet, Einstein?
Yes, right, I am.
All right, let's move to Houston, where a school superintendent is facing a serious backlash after criticizing Deshaun Watson's play on Facebook, writing, quote, "When you need precision decision-making, you can't count on a black quarterback." Needless to say, Texans coach Bill O'Brien offered a strong defense of his quarterback.
I really don't want to, waste a lot of time responding to outdated, inaccurate, ignorant, idiotic statements. I'll just let Deshaun's proven success on the field, his character off the field, speak for itself. He's one of the greatest guys I've ever coached. He represents everything that's right about football, about life. His teammates respect him, his coaching staff respects him. And in this day and age, it's just amazing that BS exists. But it does. But we're moving forward, and our fans, they love Deshaun, and we're really concentrating on the Giants. But I felt like I waste about, I think it was about a minute and a half responding to that BS.
That's on him. May peace be with him. I worry about me, so I'm not worried about what he had to say.
What do you think about it when you heard it?
Nothing.
Have you experienced racism as a quarterback?
Of course. I mean, It's just everyday life, I guess. But you know, I'm all about love, so I don't have none of that. I don't focus on none of that. I love all people, and that's what I focus on.
All right, the superintendent apologized for his comments, sort of saying, quote, "I totally regret it," before adding, "Over the history of the NFL, African Americans have had limited success." All right, listen, this is why we do the we want to go a little bit deeper than the surface. I actually love Deshaun Watson's response in terms of like, man, that's on him. I got more important things. I focus on me. And so to some degree, I think we're making too big of a deal of some superintendent who's clueless, no connection to football. He's just an idiot that was sending something stupid and racist to a friend, but I'm just not sure if it's a big deal. And I kind of, like Bill O'Brien said, I just had to waste 90 seconds addressing this. I just don't see this random idiot, particularly for those of us in the sports world. If my kid went to school there, maybe I'd have a slightly different opinion, but I just don't see it as that big of a deal. Is the superintendent's comments a mammoth issue?
It is when that superintendent has a position of power, when he has a platform. And as a superintendent, your job description is you're a CEO of a school district. And whether it's a small school district like his, 1,130 students, or it's a big school district like Los Angeles school district, 1,147 schools, not even kids, schools, you can translate that bigotry, that power, into actual materials, lack of resources, of lack of opportunities. This school goes to the field trip, this school doesn't. I wonder why that school doesn't. So when I hear someone in a position of power, look, if he was an average fan with no job, just driving around in circles, I get you. Because we're talking about sports, we're talking about X's and O's, we're talking about a game, we're talking about the NFL. But his position of power makes it a bigger deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal when he's a superintendent of a school because he's responsible for shaping and molding the minds of several hundred, you talk about 1,000 young people. So I would like to think that a guy like that is able to kind of cast aside whatever biases and prejudices to be able to think that everybody has an opportunity to exceed and to have greatness, be it intellectually, athletically, or whatever. And so when he talks about Deshaun Watson and that kind of like, it makes me think that some of those age-old stereotypes still exist. And so for me, it always will strike a nerve when those things are said.
It's, I guess my, and I said this yesterday in preparation for this topic, my expectations for people just aren't that high. Hmm. And so I kind of make the assumption that people can be just as dumb as I am. And so if you went through my text messages with my group of friends from college, we say a lot of dumb things that if made public would make us look really stupid and unfair. None of us, and certainly for myself, I'm really, really fair. And so I just don't, sometimes I see, and this is where I get into trouble, my expectations, and I'm just going to be all the way real, just for white people just aren't as high as some others where, oh my God, a white person said this, and I'm shocked and I'm offended. And I just assume they're flawed, screwed up, think dumb things, text each other dumb things, the same as the rest of us. But again, I said, if my kid went to school there, I would probably want to have a conversation with this dude and want the school board to have a conversation with this dude. I get it, but I just am not apoplectic about some random superintendent that has some really dumb thoughts.
Well, be careful detaching yourself away from this situation because your child doesn't go to this school, because that child that is coming from the school that may be shaped or molded by these racist comments from a person in power will encounter maybe in the landscape of this world your same child, or at least influence someone else who may be in connection with your same child. That's an issue. You know what? Working with you, I've heard you say several times, and I respect it on a player level, the league has been great to Black America. 70%
black
of
players, yeah.
Black players, mm-hmm. Yeah. 70% of its population on the field is Black,
yeah.
Black players. But it's amazing we see that not translate to all levels of the game. So by those standards, you would think you would see 70% coaches on the sideline that are Black. You don't. You think you would No.
All numbers aren't created equal, Marcellus. And so, again, when you start talking, I don't go into
if
it
if it's reflective.
No, well, I don't.
It's not.
I don't think that's a fair position because, again, getting into coaching is a complicated issue because one of the first door you have to go through to get into coaching is, generally speaking, a graduate assistant job.
Oh, yeah.
And so a graduate assistant job pays you nothing.
Oh, I get it.
And so a lot of times, and again, we don't even want to address these issues. We lock ourselves out of that graduate assistant job because we're married, we have a kid, we have responsibilities. Mm. And so can you even take that GA job to start your journey? I know so many, my first job out of college was for $5 an hour. The reason I could start that journey, I had no responsibilities. I had other friends that had responsibilities, and sometimes we lock ourselves out of opportunity. So we can't just reduce things to numbers. But it's complicated.
But I'm going to go there, and here's why it strikes a nerve when it comes to quarterbacks.
Yep.
Quarterbacks are the positions of centrality. For so long, blacks were not allowed to play positions of centrality, meaning positions of intelligence. Quarterback, center, middle linebacker, safety. Yep. We were kept out of those positions. Those positions produced the most coaches in the league. And so when you look now, and we talk about this being the golden age of black quarterbacks, well, when I look at sidelines, I don't see many black offensive coordinators. I don't see any black quarterback coaches. We don't see many black backup quarterbacks. Well, if that is the fertile ground of coaching, why is it that we don't have many blacks in those positions? And so it speaks to how we think about intellectual inferiority. Do we believe that blacks can handle the high IQ parts? For defense, we think that is rah-rah pep talks. He's a player's coach. Let's get him going. Offensively, that's a tactical thinking man's position. We typically don't see blacks in those positions because we typically don't see them play those positions as well.
And here, let me echo and finish that point. So in a reflective society, and let's use as a microcosm the NFL, you just said it. We don't see, in a golden age, when 70% is the standard of complexion as black players, there's not 70% in sideline in terms of coaching. There's not 70% in terms of ownership. There's only one owner, Minnesota Vikings, 40%. Okay, but let's be on subject. 70% at the quarterback position as a starter would mean we would have 23 starters. Do we have that?
Marcellus.
We have six. So, you know, you said it was complicated. You know why it's complicated? Because it faces resistance like this subject.
But there's truth to that in terms of a perception and what people believe about themselves. And that's why I like Deshaun's response. As long as he believes in himself, trust me, what this idiot superintendent think will have no impact. But again, as it relates to quarterbacks, and again, we can just throw numbers out. I'm very good friends with Steve Clarkson, one of the most elite quarterback gurus in the country.
Big
black
time.
Dude that helped. And if you really understand what's going on with the quarterback position and how much training it costs to become an elite quarterback, how much financial investment, and whose parents can send their kids to these camps all around the country.
It wasn't always that way, Jason, though. That's new.
No, I understand that. But we're in the era of opportunity for black quarterbacks. That's where the game has gone.
No, this is where the game has always been. And Obama said this, and this is interesting. It applies here. Let's talk about the soft bigotry of low expectations. Now, when you look at a field and you see athlete after athlete, and most of them looking black, but then your expectations are he can't handle the playbook. Expectations, not realizations. Didn't even test the guy. But I've noticed of late, not just in terms of one-on-one training, Steve Clarkson, et cetera, the fact that now, because the position is becoming more athletic, the 2.0 as we talk about in code, now they're looking at the black player saying, okay, I think you can handle this workload in part because we really want to take advantage of your mobility and athleticism. But that's not fair because these players can still handle the curriculum, and that resistance has been age old and it still hasn't changed.
But the question is, and Bucky, I'd like for you to respond, and Marcellus, clearly jump in if you want, but where we're at now, where the NFL, let's remove the superintendent. The mindset of NFL ownership and executives as it relates to the quarterback position, I think there is total opposite of what this superintendent's talking about. When Dak Prescott is the quarterback of America's team, and Patrick Mahomes looks like the second coming of Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, and Deshaun Watson was the favorite to win the MVP coming into this season. Right now, the NFL mindset is pro-black quarterback or whatever quarterback can help them win, unless I'm looking at something completely different.
It's changing, but we're not all the way there. And it's changing because what we're beginning to see, we're now seeing a diverse set of African-American quarterbacks that are manning to position. When I look at the list that we have Cam Newton, Tyrod Taylor, Dak Prescott, Deshaun Watson, Pat Mahomes, and Russell Wilson. Well, some of those guys are athletic dual-threat quarterbacks. But the guy that everyone is buzzing about right now is Pat Mahomes. Pat Mahomes is slicing right. and dicing defenses from the pocket.
Yes.
The more that we see guys that come into the league that are playing from the pocket, we now can say, oh, black quarterbacks are more than just run around, throw it up quarterbacks. They now have the ability to decipher and diagnose defenses, and they can win with their mind. So often when we look at broadcasts and we hear people rave about Tom Brady and Drew Brees and the like, it's because they play the game with their mind. We just want African-American quarterbacks to be
Who's
viewed.
We, though?
Oh, I'm talking about on our side. I'm talking about from the media side and also from a front office standpoint.
Yeah,
I would just like evaluators to be able to get rid of some of the code that we always use in scouting reports that kind of skews to when we talk about white quarterbacks, we're talking about IQ, brain, how they manipulate the pocket with their mind and their eyes. Black quarterbacks, we talk about the runaround. I think in this year's draft, when we look at two quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, I think you could say that their flaws were very, very similar. However, for one guy, we rarely talked about the flaws in a way that we talked about Lamar Jackson having to move to another position. When I look at Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, the completion rate's the same. One was more productive at a higher level of competition. We didn't talk about them the same. We talked about one being a project, an athlete that has to go elsewhere. The other we talked about as a franchise quarterback.
All right, welcome back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Greg Jennings and D'Angelo Hall. Let's move to Eric Dickerson, who has stirred up a whole bunch of controversy, sending a letter threatening to boycott the Hall of Fame unless the NFL ponies up for health care and salaries for Hall of Famers. A few players who signed on to Dickerson's letter have already distanced themselves, and now he's being accused of having crossed the picket line during the 1987 strike, though he denies it. All right.
This is our brother.
As I said yesterday.
Proceed.
Is he the perfect messenger? No. Is his message on point? I believe so. I believe the players should be doing, the league and the players should be doing a better job of taking care of its old players. I do, however, believe, now Eric says he didn't cross the picket line. We did a bunch of research or whatever. Him and Lawrence Taylor did something in 87. They were fighting for healthcare benefits. He didn't play in the strike game, but it looks like from the best of our research, he did report to work or something, undermine the union. Not the greatest look.
No, look, I said it before and I'm gonna say it again. Look, I'm not trying to criticize the actor, but just the act. And ED, ooh, it's looking bad, and they digging, and they finding, and this is a problem. Look, if Cap's kneeling had a baby with T.O.'s boycott, you got the Hall of Famers right now talking about benefits. That's all this is. It's just like, they just made this baby up. And Eric was like, you know what? You're right. And here's the problem. Was it the proper message? Absolutely. Is it the proper messenger? Absolutely not. But before, you have criticized Cap with the proper message, but wrong messenger. So
wrong place.
Wrong place.
Time.
Okay, we could go there.
Lost. He ain't doing this during the middle of the national anthem.
And my point was also, this was opportunistic, and it's starting to expose itself for what it is, unfortunately, even though it's the right cause.
Yeah, for me, this is not a good look. It's just not a good look. When anytime you're accused of something, it's hard to just erase that. Whether right or wrong, whether he did it or did not, anytime there's that accusation, there's that question, it's just not a good look. And then you have your counterparts who are saying, wait a minute, I didn't know anything about this.
That
in and of itself.
Kurt Warner.
Come on, ED. You my guy, but come on.
Yeah,
man.
I mean, I'm totally with you guys. Definitely the right message, wrong messenger. And ED should have known, man. At some point, this is going to come out. And that's why some guys who probably want to be in politics don't. Because they know, I got a lot of bones in that closet. Mm-hmm. I don't want nobody looking at them bones.
Yes.
And this is a bone right here, man. I mean, I was born in 83. And so to say he crossed the picket line in 87 doesn't really mean that much to me, per se. But some of these Hall of Famers who were kind of who were out there with him, that definitely means something.
But for me, what it shows is... Okay, when it was important to them,
then,
but it didn't affect you right then when you were playing.
Yeah.
You were cool. I'm going to work, but
I'm
now
say
that it affects you.
I'm gonna say when ED comes here tomorrow.
Yeah,
it's amazing that you were a part of crossing the picket line, whatever you want to go there, then and now. Why are you righteous in this moment? A lot of players, and you're not even protecting the whole body.
Marcellus.
Just the Hall of Flamers.
And that's my problem, man. Mm. I've met ED a couple times, and I like him a lot. I'm such a student of the game and historian of the game that I respect what he was able to do on the football field. And so I tend to give him a little bit more of a pass because I'm almost like a fanboy from that sense.
Same here.
But, gosh, come on, ED. First of all, you got to fight for everybody.
I got
first
it, but let's just be clear here. We've all done things 20 years ago and changed our perspective, become better people, hopefully.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of things 20 years ago you can hang around my neck that doesn't reflect on where I am right now.
Yeah, Jackson, but that's not a 180 from Eric. Eric said Hall of Famers only.
I know. Eric is a little bit greedy, but he's on the right message. He's on the right message. We got to cut him some slack. All right, before we go, we have a special message for our good friend, Greg Jennings.
Happy birthday.
Oh, man.
Happy birthday, Daddy. Happy birthday, Daddy.
Surprise. Happy birthday, babe. We can't wait to see you, and we love you.
Happy birthday, Daddy!
y'all awesome. Gonna mess me that up
is
right
awesome.
Here.
Amazing.
Hey,
they better make sure I'm out here for my birthday.
Yeah.
I need that too, man. I love that.
Right. Yeah, beautiful family.
I appreciate
and
that.
And even more beautiful kitchen. You see that kitchen? Greg got that money.
Can somebody cook in that kitchen? Can I get an invite? All right, welcome back. All right, Master Ellis. You know I can't stand what's happening out there on social media.
Yep.
So we got our social media manager, Darnell Smith, my homeboy.
Sir.
He's here to convince us it's not so bad. Darnell.
Darnell, are you going to wash that shirt? That's about the fifth time.
Hey,
I've only been here 2 weeks.
Hey, don't hate on me. I'm going to get you one. I'm going to have you wearing one of these days.
Look, my fireplace is electric. I don't need to burn nothing else in there to get it started.
All right, Columbia.
What you got?
Yeah, let's start with the champs, the Philadelphia Eagles, who brought back receiver Jordan Matthews this week. Matthews played last season in Marcellus' old stomping grounds, Buffalo, and told reporters that he brought more than souvenirs back to Philly with him. Check this out. Jordan Matthews said he's a father now because of his year in Buffalo, but there wasn't anything to do there but each other. Marcellus, you played up in Buffalo. Can you confirm this?
Guilty as charged, John. Guilty as charged. I mean, a lot of people get caught up in the moment right now. You know, I got my expecting a child in January. Got my little son that's 3. A lot of people forget I got a 19-year-old, and that just times up perfectly with my Buffalo experiences. Trust me. Them cold winters, you be like, something got to keep me warm. Let's go, Buffalo. Bill's Mafia over here. I am guilty as charged. I
got Buffalo wings. I would just be heavier, I guess, if I lived in Buffalo.
You just can't eat but so many wings. Then what you going to do after you finish eating? You know what I'm saying?
All right, Darnell.
Yeah, let's move to NBA Twitter's most dramatic team right now, the Minnesota Timberwolves. You guys were talking about Jimmy Butler's trade demand earlier, but there were also rumors back in May that Carl Anthony Towns might want out of Minnesota. Now, some internet detectives have put together a theory that Butler slept with Towns' girlfriend, and that's what's causing both players' unhappiness. Cat replied to one of these stories with a Trump-esque fake news. Y'all think that this is all about a love triangle going wrong?
This is why I love being 50, man.
Because
I'm out of this.
Out the game.
The whole social media thing and living my life all over social media, this is where it eventually leads to. your business out in the streets.
I'm with you there, man. Glad that's behind me in those worlds. And that kind of effect on your day-to-day, and you got to go answer fake news. But I will say this, internet detectives, you may be onto something, because I've been in the locker room and seen hundreds of fights. And they all come down to only two reasons. Money or what's her name? And I mean, just to let you know, I have not seen a third reason for a fight in the locker room. So,
same what's her name? Girl. Usher and R. Kelly. Same girl.
All right. Y'all tell me.
Yeah. Let's go to Odell Beckham Jr., who got paid this summer and has been on the best behavior for the first few weeks of the season, but still has a little fire in him. Check out this tweet from this morning. Walking in today to my 900,000 random PED drug test today. It's actually funny how I randomly get tested every other week. Dear NFL, please stop sending these people. You're taking away from meeting times and film. Thanks. You got any sympathy for Odell here?
I did when I first saw this story. You sent it to me this morning.
Yeah.
And then I clicked on the link and I'm blocked and couldn't read Odell's tweet.
What?
Blocked from Odell? Yeah, I'm unblocked from Odell. I think it was the blonde hair comment.
Oh,
I don't like his blonde hair.
Oh, that's messed up.
It is what it is. So, yeah, I got some sympathy for Odell. But
well, I'm not blocked, so I read it. Let me say this. Look, Odell, your offseason this year, the substance overseas. Yeah, I mean, NFL, I think it's always random. I've been the player. Look, it's been times I got tested 20 times in a year. There's the times I only got tested once. So I think it's random, but Odell, you gave him a little fuel if it's not random, but I believe it is.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yes, sir. To a guy who's living his best life right now, Swaggy Ryan Fitzmagic, who's finally getting some respect on his name, with one fan tweeting, Ryan Fitzpatrick has 16 more passing touchdowns in his career than Hall of Famer Troy Aikman and 44 fewer starts. To which our coworker Troy brilliantly responded, who cares? You like how Troy clapped back here?
I love it, because he's just being factual and right. This whole thing with numbers, we want to evaluate football like it's fantasy football. And it's just all about the numbers. And there's no context to the fact he played in a completely different era with a team with Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin and that running game and a hell of a defense. If Troy Aikman wanted to put up numbers, he could have put up numbers. But he put up championships. And so I would have just put 3-0 up there, because Fitzpatrick ain't got no rings and Troy got three.
How dare you be logical to the irrational Twitterverse? I mean, nobody want to hear that. And you're talking the truth. Grandma always told me, you can't make sense out of nonsense. So in this moment, I wish a Troy Aikman of that stature would not even respond at all. Because a positive response or a negative response is not the best response. It's apathy. Like, that just...
That is apathy. That's Who
not,
cares?
That's not apathy. That is like, no one cares. But why would you address something that no one cares about? That's just the only part of that.
Because he's a hardcore football guy me that loves the game.
Like you.
And love, yeah, like me.
Like us. Oh, yeah. So we're going to compare you to Troy Aikman, but not Fitzpatrick, huh?
Yes. Me and Troy Aikman, we love the game. We take pride in the game. We understand the game on a much deeper level than some of you guys that just played the game. Some of us actually understood it. And when we see it misrepresented like this,
right, that's
it
real.
Bugs us a little bit.
I get it. It got to him a little bit. Itty bitty bit, admit it.
Yeah, it does. When people don't understand the game that's so this important and this valuable. 3-0. The score is 3-0. It ain't about TD.
Yeah, don't worry.
3-0. Great job, Darnell. Thank you, man. I heard from the people back at Warren Central. They loved the shirt yesterday.
Yeah, wash it next time.
Sir.
All right, today we're talking about Bill Belichick, who, as we talked about earlier, is the subject of a new book that includes some juicy revelations, like the fact he doesn't think Tom Brady's as special as everyone else. My approval rating for Belichick has gone down quite a bit, from 78 all the way down to 69.
Wow.
I'm dropping him 5 points in job performance from a 25 to 20. I'm dropping him 4 points in character from 14 to 10. He's the same in all-time greatness. I got him at a 25. Authenticity, he is what he is. He's a 14. Total of 69 Hall of Good.
Not only did you drop him, 10 points? You dropped him.
Nine points.
You dropped him into the Hall of Good.
Absolutely.
Bill Belichick's in the Hall of Good for
Jason Willis. In terms of my approval.
Interesting. All right, let's break down this approval. What? They're 1-1 right now. same thing that they were last year, 1-1. Oh, Super Bowl year, they went to the Super Bowl.
No.
And this year...
You've lost count. They're 1-2. My count starts all of 2018. Super Bowl, they lost. They're 1-2.
Oh, that's how you want to do it? Well, that good Jacksonville team that they just lost to, respect that as a loss that most people are going to suffer.
Don't nitpick me. Get to yours.
Okay, let me get to mine. It's simple. Yeah. You know this. All-time greatness, 25. Move on. Let's talk about job performance. I did have him go down two notches, but he's still an all-time great coach. And you're playing Jacksonville week two? Come on, man. I get it. Authenticity, 9, the same. We all know what Belichick is about. It's stick. He's at the podium. But we know in real life he has a personality. Character. That went down for me, unfortunately, because right now he's being petty of late, in his feelings, having this beef, almost public beef with his own franchise.
He don't love his players, Marcellus. That's low character.
Well, he's not the only coach I know in that camp.
He don't love Tom Brady.
That's a problem. Now we're talking. A goat. You have a goat. Nurture that goat. Take care of that goat. Get all the milk you can out that goat. And this guy,
I mean, you think Ty Lue wasn't appreciative of LeBron James?
Oh, beyond appreciative. Like a little call.
Phil Jackson wasn't appreciative of Michael Jordan?
At times.
And Bill Belichick can't show Tom Brady no love. I went down 4 points in character and may go down even further, particularly if they lose again this weekend. I can't wait to get him down to scout team status.
Man.
All-time greatness, he's always going to be a 25.
25.
But I'm going to figure out a way to get him to dumpster fire because I'm still irate about that damn Super Bowl decision.
Yeah, that Super Bowl decision. He'll never get that one back. That one was worse or Pete Carroll's?
That one was worse.
Okay.